Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, this is Donna Sebo, and the beautiful music you have just listened to was performed by a very special lady who we are having the privilege of having as a guest on the show. Her name is Joyce Geating, and Joyce has put together a book. She's written a book about Janos Starker, who is considered the king of cellists. Joyce, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you.
This music was so exquisitely beautiful, and of course people will be able to go to your website, joycegeating.com, and they will be able to hear more excerpts if they're interested. But Joyce, you have had a most interesting life because you have had a passion for music. Your background is just absolutely amazing. You are a soloist as well as a chamber musician. You've played all over the United States and various countries throughout Europe. You have been involved with so many amazing artists in your career. And you also are passionate about teaching young musicians, young individuals who want to play the cello. You have a number of them who have won awards of all types. You have served on the faculties of the University of Wisconsin at Oshkosh, Cornell College, and the University of Redlands. Right now, at this time, you're teaching at the California Lutheran University, and you're the director of the CLU Conservatory of Music. Now, you are a protege of Janos Starker. You have a Doctor of Musical Arts degree in cello pedagogy and performance from the University of Oregon. You, again, have performed with so many different companies. It's just amazing. But what I found so fascinating is that your cello that you play is 230 years old. You've got to tell us a story about how you got a cello that old.
Actually, it's older than that.
It's older than
it's
that?
It's probably closer to 240 years old.
Okay, I'm going to ask you, Joyce, to speak up a little louder.
Okay.
Because you've got a soft voice. 240 years old? How in the world did you ever find such a magnificent instrument? Its tones are so lush and rich.
Oh, it's a real treat. And I just feel so blessed to have that cello. And maybe it was meant to be mine. I was living at the time in Billings, Montana. I had two little boys. And the instrument repairman in town told me that I should go and see this cello. It was in the home of a man in his 90s. I went to his apartment, and here was this instrument in a state of disrepair. It was a total wreck.
Oh, my.
In a tattered cloth bag in the corner of his apartment by the radiator.
By the radiator. Oh, that just gives you shivers.
Well, he was not a cellist, but someone gave him that cello as a payment for a debt during the war.
Oh, my word.
But someone else had come through town and told him that it was an excellent instrument. So he knew he wasn't supposed to give it away. and he wanted a lot of money for it, and I didn't have money. I was shortly after a widow. My husband died in a plane crash. It was very unfortunate. We had two little boys, ages 2 and 3.
Oh, my.
We had $25,000 life insurance, and I went back, and I bought that cello, and I had it restored, rebuilt, by David Saunders in Seattle, and it just turned out to be exquisite. It's just such a gorgeous sound, and it still has its scars from its former damage. It was repaired in 1827 in New York. That label is inside. And John Edwards, yes.
Yeah, how could you have found out that it had been previously repaired in New York and there was an actual label inside of the instrument itself?
Right. There's a repair label, 1827, R. Bunye, New York. And John Edward Betts is inscribed on the back of the instrument, so I know it's a Betts instrument.
Incredible.
Made in London. Came across the ocean sometime in a boat.
That's
my wonderful cello, and I've had it since 1972, and I really love that cello. I had a copy of it made not too long ago, and I played that copy while my cello was, again, being restored and rebuilt and put back into excellent condition.
Mm-hmm.
It took a year to restore it, and then, unfortunately, I didn't really care for its replacement, so I sold it, and I'm back to my best cello.
Of course, of course. I understand that totally. Now, Janos Starker is a man that you became familiar with in the 70s.
Right.
And there developed this rapport between the two of you. This man is so renowned among cellists.
Oh, he's remarkable.
He is just, everything that you have said about him in your book is just incredible, and his recordings can be obtained, you know, through Amazon. You can, if you love cello music, that is something that you would want to hear his playing. You, the two of you, what made the two of you connect, and how were you given the permission to write his story? Because he's still alive, and he's in his 80s.
I was doing my doctoral dissertation. I had never met him before, but I chose 5 famous cellists to write about, and I was comparing the way they approach the instrument and teach aspects of the instrument. And ironically, 3 of the 5 turned out to be Hungarians, all from Budapest, so I had to change that plan. But I did write about 2 Hungarians, and both in the Franz Liszt Academy of Music in Budapest, and he was one of them. Also, Fritz Mag, also at Indiana University, and Robert Latke, who was teaching at University of Oregon, where I received my doctoral degree, Gordon Everson from Arizona, Gabor Rido from USC. And of all 5 of them, Starker just, he was just stunning to me. He's just brilliant. And he's such a phenomenal cellist and a phenomenal teacher, and he cares so much about his students, and he gives so much. He's just very, very generous with himself in every way.
Now, he's considered one of the greatest musicians of the 20th century. And being that he's in his middle 80s at this time, for you to be able to get all of the material that you have about him, I mean, the fact that when he was so young, the items that he was teaching, at 8 years of age? I mean, that is incredible. That's like a Mozart, you know, writing a symphony at 5. I mean, this is just amazing.
Well, he was asked to demonstrate for another student. His teacher asked him to demonstrate some passage or something from the piece. And he was playing this for Eva Janser, who later on became his colleague. And by the age of 12, he had a half dozen students, and he always felt that by teaching, that helped him to understand better the music and what he was doing.
The information on his family, I mean, this is a man that just, his family, what they went through was just amazing. His mother was Ukrainian. His father was born in a little village in Russia. They both were from Russia. And when he was a teenager, he ended up going to Poland. But his parents, they were actually considered as immigrants in Hungary. And the whole family was denied Hungarian citizenship, and they really didn't have a country that they belonged to.
Even though he was born there in Hungary, Stockard was not a citizen. He was considered a foreigner in the land of his birth. This was very hurtful for him. And during the war, he was Jewish, he was a foreigner. They were considered the enemies, and these people were rounded up and they were shot. His brothers were sent to a labor camp, his two brothers, who were older than he. And the best that he could figure, piecing together stories from people who saw them in one place or another, they were in Yugoslavia, and they had to dig their own grave, and then they were shot. And during the war, I guess he was about 20 at this time, he was sent to a detention center. In the middle of the Danube River, there's an island, Sepolcuyet Island, where they were making Messerschmitt plans for the war effort, for the Nazi war effort.
Mm-hmm.
And his job, among others, was to round up the unexploded bombs and to defuse them so they would not explode, and other jobs as well. But at one time, the American bombers were coming overhead to destroy this Messerschmitt plant and other industrial sites in Budapest. And he, Scharker, and others headed for the trenches, which they had dug. And the bombs exploded. American bombers dropped the bombs, and people on both sides of him were killed. And one man lost his hearing entirely from the explosion. But here he was, alive, and his hearing was perfect. It was intact. And through all of this, I mean, there were many, many times he found a gun pointed at him in his stomach or whatever. He survived just horrendous things. And he felt, because of those experiences, those war experiences, and guns and murderous inclinations and prejudice of one sort or another, he concluded that only about 10% of the human race deserves the title of being human. He calls the rest two-legged animals. And he felt that he had a special mission in life. And that mission was fulfilled in his cello playing and teaching and recordings. It's a remarkable life.
Yes, it is a remarkable life. Now, one of the many aspects of this man is not only was he very talented as a musician, but he, at a very young age, and perhaps it was due to the various circumstances of his life, he became aware that he was in danger of perhaps being damaged through the playing of the instrument. He had known people that had ended up developing problems with their bodies, their hands. He figured out a way to avoid this, so as a musician, he wouldn't be damaged, and he did this at a relatively young age. What was it that he discovered about being a musician and not developing, you know, problems with the tendons and the muscles in the fingers and paralysis and all of these things that so many people never hear about with professional musicians?
Well, when he was a student at the Franz Liszt Academy in Budapest, there were a couple of teachers there who were total maniacs on the science of instrumental playing and use of the body and body movements. And one time he had a session with Dejo Rados, and this man talked for hours and hours about circles and circular motions and the physical process of making music, and it didn't make any sense to him. He was walking home, and ideas of circles became almost obsessive to him. What did all this mean? Then he spent a lifetime discovering that practically everything this man said applies, in that we are all part of this circle of life, and every motion is part of a circle. Musical sounds are circular, waves of tension and non-tension. Every phrase in music is part of a circle, but not a complete circle. And that instrumental playing, particularly cello playing, requires a lot of stamina. It's a big instrument. It's a muscular thing that we do. And we have to take care of our bodies not to abuse or overuse these muscles and to use our bodies effectively. So he became something of an expert himself not only in helping cellists and students, but other instrumentalists to discover where they had excess tension causing pain and problems in their lives. So he's been a remarkable doctor of the instrument.
And that has, to this day, he still interacts with people and still presents this information. In your book, and I'm going to quote this, that because of his war experiences, the various things that Starker went through when he was growing up, made him extremely independent and very self-sufficient, and his attitude towards music, musicians, critics, and those people around musical life evolved a great deal because of this, and he was unafraid of just about anyone because he concluded that nothing worse could possibly happen to him. What an attitude. I've already been through the pits. It's not going to be any worse than this. And he had a resolve that you say was like steel because no one would ever tell him what to do. No one was ever allowed to help him. And if he believed in something, he could not be influenced otherwise. When it came to his friends, he was so loyal. It was incredible. And he has said that what he later achieved with his life, it was only the result of his head in his hands. It had no help, no gifts, no mentors, except with the exception of Fritz Reiner.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we all know that we all have help along the way in various levels. But I would imagine that this man, because of what he had survived in your book about him, is just incredible.
Okay.
But he had no qualms about expressing his opinion. And when he saw something that wasn't right, he would speak up, and he really didn't care what anybody thought, whether they liked him, whether they became a friend or became an enemy. He could care less. He figured, again, he'd already been through the depths of hell that you possibly could go through in life. So he said, why am I going to be worried about something so insignificant as somebody else's opinion? But he saw so much tragedy. He saw so much death. And music was, in many ways, the healing aspect for him. And he went through illness. He went through starvation. Just so many things that happened to this man. What brought him to the United States?
After the war, he and his wife were newly married. They were able to go to Romania. And from there, he went to the Geneva competition in Switzerland. And from there, they received a visa to go to Belgium with no right to get off the train. But, however, they got to Paris and they got off. and he spent about a year after the war in Paris. A number of his Hungarian friends all showed up in the same small hotel, and they had a wonderful time just by the fact that they survived. They were so poor, they were just about penniless, and but they were so happy. They had a great time together. And then he spent some time on the south of France on the Mediterranean, little town, trying to prepare with a string quartet for concerts in Germany or in Europe, other places in Europe. And then Antal Doradi met him in Paris and invited him to come and play with the Dallas Symphony. That way he could get a visa to come to America. That was the door open for him.
Mm-hmm.
He spent a year, or a season, rather, with the Dallas Symphony, then went to New York to get his membership with the Musicians Union, and there he met Reiner, where he became a principal cellist with the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra. And he played with Reiner not only in New York, but when Reiner left for Chicago Symphony, he went with Reiner to Chicago. Total of 9 years he spent with Fritz Reiner.
Now, Fritz Reiner was very much like a father to him, a fatherly image.
Right.
And this was an extremely strong bond, and he felt that Fritz Reiner was the greatest conductor who had ever lived. And this is, according to the information that you were able to get, one of the rare associations with people that was strong enough to last throughout his lifetime.
Reiner was, in his opinion, the greatest musician of that century, the 20th century. He was such an outstanding musician. And he conveyed things so simply with simple motions to the orchestra. He figured if he had to exaggerate his motions, he was wasting his effort. He expected people to pay attention. And they did. He's left a lasting impact on a lot of people, not just Starker.
Well, when you think about what Starker went through, and I've noted something here, 40 hours a week of instrumental playing and opera rehearsals. And he said, after you did that, everything else seemed easy. He said he remembers days when they'd play Carmen in the afternoon, then go out for a Turkish bath on 42nd Street, grab a sandwich, then come back and play Gioconda in the evening. And he said the Met provided an atmosphere in which the cellist felt at home artistically. 7 performances each week, including what used to be the Texaco radio broadcast, and there was a provision for extra performances. So at any time they could be called in for additional rehearsals, and they could keep the players as long as they wanted to. 7 different operas each week, 9 performances in a week's time, strenuous schedule. And he said you needed the stamina of a horse.
I think that's true.
Wow.
An opera lasts 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
If you do 2 in a day, that's 6 hours of playing. That's a lot of playing.
Yes,
how many,
it is.
How many years can you do that just physically?
But he did. When did he? He still plays, doesn't he?
He's now 85, and he doesn't play in public any longer. But when I saw him last, he was just so excited to tell me all about all these things his former students are doing. He's just brilliant. Same as ever. He hasn't changed.
This is marvelous, because I think once you are a fine musician, you never lose the love for it. You always want to have it in your life, because it's like, it's that mental, emotional, and spiritual nutrition for the soul. It's just so vital, and without it, he wouldn't be here. So as long as he can still be involved with people and sharing his skill and expertise on whatever level, it's marvelous. But you have a story in your book, and it was about one particular evening following a performance in 1954. And he and some other people were having a meal, and they were talking about their war experiences. And they were talking about all the difficulties they went through.
Oh.
And he had mentioned he was in a detention camp near Budapest.
Right.
Where, just what you talked about earlier, where warplanes were produced in the Messerschmitt plant, and the American planes carpet bombing the area, and a man losing his hearing, and how he survived, just like you mentioned earlier, and there was a man, and correct me if I'm pronouncing it wrong, Fuchs.
Alan Fuchs, horn player. They were the only two who went from the Met Tripoli Opera Orchestra to Chicago Symphony. And so they knew each other, and they, you know, were friends already. Well, it came up in conversation. I guess Starker asked, what were you doing on July 31st in 1944? And they were talking about this particular date. And 10 years ago, Fuchs then reached in his pocket and took out his diary. After a few moments of pondering, Alan said, I was an American bomber, and Starker said, well, I was detained on this island in the Danube River, and we had to head for the trenches when the American bombers came over dropping bombs. And Alan said, I was one of those bombers. Silence. Starker put out his hand, shook Alan's hand, and said to him, thank you for missing me.
I mean, that's serendipitous. I mean, here are two men. One was up in a plane, the other was down on the ground. All of this stuff going on. And what are the odds of meeting someone that you've been performing with, you're having dinner with, and you have this conversation, and this is the result?
10 years later.
Yeah, it's just incredible. Absolutely incredible. And
well, he did survive.
He did.
And thank God he did survive, and he had such a mission because of that survival.
Now, he is still a man who, as a teacher, is still very, very passionate about everything that he loves.
He's youthfully enthusiastic about whatever comes his way and about what he, as soloist or teacher, as cellist and musician, manages to tease from himself. And he's just an astounding person. At age 85, he's going strong. He's such an inspiration to his students, and I have a good story to tell you.
Okay.
Because he's so demanding, and his performances are on such a high level of excellence. His students are always a little nervous playing for him. They're on edge. It's, you know, quite an experience to be one of his students. Well, there's a story in various versions that goes something like this. Three cellists die, and they face St. Peter. And St. Peter asks the first cellist, "Who did you study with?" He replies, "Leonard Groff." "Sorry," said St. Peter, "there's no room for you up here. Go to hell." The second cellist, St. Peter asks, "Who did you study with?" And the second cellist says, "Rostropovich." "Sorry," said St. Peter, "there's no room for you either. Go to hell." And third cellist, St. Peter asks, "With whom did you study?" "Janusz Starker," is the answer. "Oh," St. Peter says, "come on in, welcome. We know you've already been through hell." He puts his students through the ringer in an attempt to make them the very best human beings and musicians that they can possibly be.
Now, Joyce, you were given permission to write his story. Did he have to review this before you had it published? I'm assuming he did.
Well, he was performing Brahms' Double Concerto with his son-in-law, William Prudhoe, in the Los Angeles area. And I went to the concert. I don't think I was in the orchestra. No, I was in the audience. I don't remember. Anyway, after the concert, like probably the next day, I went and I played for him, which is usually what I do. I bring whatever repertoire I'm performing at the time and have a lesson. And after the lesson, I was speaking with him, and I asked him, "Is anybody writing about you?" And he said no, and I asked if I could. He said, "Fine." So about 10 years of talking to various people, his friends, his family, his students, anybody I could find who knew him and had stories to tell, I'd interview them with my tape recorder, and I would transcribe this and somehow try to put this all in some form of chronology. So it would take some kind of shape, because I had little bits and pieces of information
mm-hmm.
to figure out how to organize it. And as this evolved, I sent him a copy, you know, so he could tell me, you know, are these facts correct? Change me where it's wrong, correct me where it's wrong. And he doesn't have a lot of patience for that, so he didn't really help me
mm-hmm.
Until the very end. Actually, in 2004, I was ready to publish. I sent him a copy of the book in the state that it was in at that time, and a birthday card and a copy of the cover, front and back. And he called me and said, "Don't publish your book. Mine is coming out the same month." Okay. Well, he certainly knows his life better than I do, so I put mine back on the shelf and went on with my business. His book is fascinating, The World According to Janusz Starker. Excellent book. So I gave his book 4 years to make it around the world and be read, and then I decided to pick up the project again.
Mm-hmm.
Revised it. I changed some things and got some facts from his book that I didn't have prior, and deleted some stories because he used them in his book.
Mm-hmm.
And then I published it last fall.
Was he surprised when you gifted him with a copy?
Oh, he knew it was coming.
Ah.
I stay in touch with him all the time.
Well, I just think the book is superb. And for any of you who would be interested in music on any level, this is a man that if you're not familiar with him, you really should become familiar with him, because his life story would make a phenomenal movie. It's a tremendous book.
Oh, that's
Janusz Starker. And if you'd like to find out more, and after the break that we're going to be going to in just a little bit, we'll be playing a couple more excerpts. But Joyce Geating has her own music. You can go to her website, joycegeating.com. J-O-Y-C-E-G-E-E-T-I-N-G. You'll find out about her various performances, and there are bits and pieces of music that you can listen to, which are just gorgeous. And then this book, Yano Starker, King of Cello, is absolutely phenomenal. Joyce, it's been a delight having you as a guest. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you, Donna.
This is Donna Thiebaud. We are going to be taking a break for just a moment. Again, if music is a passion of yours, if you know of someone who has a passion for music, this is a must-read book. Yano Starker, King of Cellists, The Making of an Artist, Joyce Dieting, my guest. Go to her website, joycedieting.com. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Thiebaud. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Thiebaud's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Thiebaud's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Thiebaud and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Pete Smith here with OrthoTemp Health Shoes. These funky-looking shoes, invented by a medical doctor, will make you feel better. Who has time to work out these days? Wear our sandals or clogs around the house, go shopping, wear them on the treadmill. You'll burn extra calories. You'll tone and trim the legs, thighs, lower abdomen, rear end, your love handle area. You'll simply feel better. Check them out on the web at orthotebb.net. Pete Smith here with OrthoTemp Health Shoes. These funky-looking shoes, invented by a medical doctor, will make you feel better. Who has time to work out these days? Wear our sandals or clogs around the house, go shopping, wear them on the treadmill. You'll burn extra calories. You'll tone and trim the legs, thighs, lower abdomen, rear end, your love handle area. You'll simply feel better. Check them out on the web at orthotebb.net.
Hi, this is Donna, and telephone lines are now open. Telephone number to call in to is 877-876-5227. Worldwide, 888-815-9756. This is Donna Thiebaud. If you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, this is the time to do it. The phone lines, again, are open, 877-876-5227. Also, worldwide, 888-815-9756. And regarding Yano Starker, the man played over 1,000 performances before he was 20 years of age, and then as an adult has played symphonies and done performances well over 1,000. No one has equaled his record. It's quite something to know about. By the way, I want to thank those of you who are sending me information via email, because I've gotten something here regarding fire extinguishers, and I'm going to be sharing that with you. Also, get that pad of paper and pen handy, because we're going to be talking about a wonderful, wonderful recipe, an apple spice custard cake. Oh, my goodness. You'll have to run 45 miles to work off the calories, but, ooh, is it good. And then there's just so many other things that I'm going to be sharing with you today. So as time allows, I will be doing exactly that. And don't forget, for those of you in the Pacific Northwest, I'm going to be doing a class on April 25th, which is a Saturday from 10 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon. We are going to be catering lunch. The class is called Mind Vision, How to Power Up Your Inner Giant. We're going to help tap that personal genius that you have within and give you the opportunity to shift towards those changes that you want to make and really design what it is that you would like in your life, in your future. Now, where is this going to be held? It's going to be at the Center for Spiritual Living, which is at 206 North J Street in Tacoma, Washington. It's $95 for the class. Mention the Donna Sebo Show, and you'll get a $10 discount. Reservations, the telephone number is 253-383-3151. Again, that's Mind Vision, Powering Up Your Inner Giant. And this is going to be a very interactive class, so I invite you to give us a call, set up your time to be a part of the class, because last year we just had such a tremendous time. This year is going to be even better. Now, I want to say that Doug sent me this information regarding certain fire extinguishers, and they're called Kiddie fire extinguishers, K-I-D-D-E, fire extinguishers. And the reason they're being recalled is they're not operating properly when you squeeze the handle. Now, these are the particular extinguishers. They are with model numbers FX340SC, FX340H, FX340GW, XL5MR, FX210R, FX340SC-2, FX210W, XL2.5T, CZ-4, and then also E340-3. And the manufacturing dates on these extinguishers are between October 2007, April 2008. Now, this particular series of extinguishers were sold during that time for about $35, and you can find the name Kiddie, K-I-D-D-E, and the model number right on the label. It's on the front of the extinguisher, and the manufacturing year is on the bottom of the extinguisher. So you can go to this particular website to find out, or this link, you can find out more about it. Now, these are very popular fire extinguishers, and they're sold everywhere nationwide. So if you've got one in your vehicle, if you've got one in your home, it wouldn't hurt to check it. Now, this is what you go for. You just put up in the search box at the top of your screen, CPSC, Charles Paul, Sam Charles, CPSCPUB/PREREL/PRHTM109/09151.html. Just wanted to share that with you because it doesn't hurt to know about that kind of stuff. And again, for those of you that have something special that you want to send to me that you think people need to know about, then just send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. And then when I'm in a position to be able to share it, I'll be glad to do that. So again, that's a Kiddie fire extinguisher, K-I-D-D-E. So if you've got them in your home, in your car, be sure you check that out. Also, I got something from Tom, and this was a story that I thought was really quite good. This is about a successful businessman who was becoming elderly and knew it was time to choose a successor to take over his business. Now, instead of choosing one of his directors or one of his kids, he decided to do something a little bit different. He called all of the young executives in his company together. And this is what he said to them. "It's time for me to step down and choose the next CEO. I've decided to choose one of you." These executives, they were all very young, were quite surprised, but the boss continued, saying, "I'm going to give each one of you a seed today, one very special seed. I want you to plant the seed, water it, and come back here 1 year from the day with what you've grown from the seed I've given you. I will then judge the plants that you bring, and the one I choose will be the next CEO. Well, one of the young men that was listening to this, one of the young executives, his name was Jim, and just like everybody else, he got a seed, and he went home and told his wife the story about the potential opportunity for him to become a CEO. So what did she do? She did what any wife would do. She helped him get a pot, soil, and compost, and he planted the seed. Every day he watered it and watched it. Was there anything happening? After about 3 weeks, some of the other executives began to talk about their seeds and the plants that were beginning to grow. Well, Jim kept checking the seed, his pot, and nothing ever grew. 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks went by. Nothing was happening. Everything was nothing. By now, others were talking about their plants, but Jim didn't have a plant, and he felt like he had failed. 6 months go by. Nothing has come up in Jim's pot. He just knew that somehow or another he had killed the seed because everybody else had trees and tall plants, but he didn't have a thing. Well, Jim didn't say anything to his coworkers. However, he just kept watering and fertilizing the soil. He wanted that seed to grow so badly he could almost taste it. A whole year goes by. And all of the young executives of the company bring their potted plants to the CEO for inspection. Jim told his wife that he wasn't going to take the empty pot. But his wife said, look, be honest about this. Speak the truth. You put the seed in. Maybe we watered it too much. Nothing grew. Be honest about the whole thing. Well, Jim, when he went in for this very significant meeting, because obviously the owner of the company was going to be making his decision that day, he thought it was going to be the most embarrassing moment of his life. However, he agreed with his wife. He had to be truthful about the whole thing. So here comes Jim walking into this huge boardroom with his empty pot. Now, all the soil was there, but there wasn't a thing in it. He was astonished when he walked into the room, seeing all of these plants, beautiful plants that had been grown by the other executives, all shapes, all sizes. And what does Jim have to do? You got it. He had to put that pot right on the table, and then he was so embarrassed he put it on the floor, and his colleagues just laughed at him. Some of them felt a little sorry for him. Now, the elderly CEO came into the room and greeted all of these young men and women that were sitting there. Well, Jim just decided he was going to get as far away from everybody and everything in the room as he possibly could. The CEO said, wow, you guys really have done a phenomenal job. These trees, all of these plants, it's amazing. Now, I want you to know, today one of you will be appointed, the next CEO. And then the CEO, he was looking around the room, and he spots Jim at the back of the room with his empty pot. Well, he turns to his financial director, who was sitting next to him in this board meeting room, and he said, I want you to bring that young man to the front, the one with the empty pot. Well, Jim was horrified. Can you imagine what that would have felt like? He thought, oh, he knows I'm a failure. I'm probably going to get fired. Well, Jim had to walk to the front. He couldn't avoid the instruction of going up there. And the CEO asked him what had happened to his seed. So Jim told him the story. The CEO then asked everybody to sit down except Jim. He looked at Jim, and of course Jim is just not feeling very well at all. And he announces, looks at the young man, then looks at all of the other young executives. He said, I want you to see your next chief executive officer. His name is Jim. Now, Jim's standing there, and he's stunned. That's the last thing in the world he ever thought would happen. Jim thought to himself, what? How could I do this? I didn't even grow the seed. Everybody else gets very agitated. How could he be the new CEO? All of these questions were coming up to the CEO. Well, the CEO raised his hands and made them quiet down, and he said, 1 year ago today, I gave everyone in this room a seed. I told you to take the seed, plant it, water it, and bring it back to me today, but I gave you all boiled seeds. Every one of them were dead. It was not possible for them to grow. All of you, except Jim, have brought me trees and plants and flowers. When you found that the seed would not grow, you substituted another seed for the one I gave you. Jim was the only one with the courage and honesty to bring me a pot with my seed in it. Therefore, he is the one who will be the new chief executive officer. Powerful story. And one that I think would be a good example for a lot of different people. Thank you, Tom. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to come back in just a moment. Give me a call if you'd like to chat. Meanwhile, I'll have this recipe, apple spice custard cake. It's going to be ready in just a moment. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
This is Pete Smith for OrthoTeb Health Shoes. OrthoTebs are completely heelless, invented by a doctor, and you'll burn 3 times the calories of regular walking in our sandals, 2 times the calories of regular walking in our clogs. They help you tone and trim the entire leg, thighs, buns, lower abs, and love handle area. They offer symptom improvement for people with plantar fasciitis and low back pain. Check them out on the web at www.orthoteb.net.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. And don't forget, for those of you in Tacoma, Washington, I've got this class, Mind Vision, Powering Up Your Inner Giant, that's going to be on April the 25th, Saturday, 10 until 4. We will have a catered lunch. It's just a great way to have interactive time. I love doing this because it's so great to be able to share what I know and interact with the people that attend. It's only $95 if you mention the Donna Sebo Show. then you're going to get a $10 discount. Here's the number for reservations, 253-383-3151. Of course, leave your name and phone number should you get voicemail. This is held at the Center for Spiritual Living at 206 North J Street in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, if you got that pad of paper and pen ready, this is a dessert that when you fix it, it is one, going to smell absolutely heavenly, but two, it serves about 12 people, but if you're sort of like me, it's like one piece may not be enough. It's just, it's so good. Really, really easy. Here is the recipe. Now, what you're going to need is a package of spice cake mix. That's right, spice cake mix. One package, you're going to need two medium apples, peeled and chopped. You need one 14-ounce can of sweetened condensed milk. Now, you don't want evaporated milk. You want the sweetened condensed milk. You know, it's that thick, 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 gooey stuff. Then you need one 8-ounce container of sour cream, a quarter of a cup of lemon juice, and you may want to have a little bit of cinnamon. If you love cinnamon the way I do, that's just something that's just not only aromatic, but, oh, it gives that wonderful, wonderful taste. Real easy to do this. You fix your cake mix according to package directions, and I'm going to give you a couple of Donna tips that somebody passed along to me many years ago that really adds to this. Then in that pack, and once you've fixed your cake mix, then you stir in your apples, and you pour your batter into a well-greased and floured 13-by-9-inch baking pan. Now, you bake it for 30 to 35 minutes, 30 to 35 minutes, and use a toothpick to make sure, you know, near the center. You want to test it in the center because it depends on how your oven bakes. It's going to come out clean. Now, while that's baking, in a medium bowl, you want to combine your sweetened condensed milk and the sour cream. You want to mix that really well. Then you want to mix in the lemon juice. When you remove the cake from the oven, you want to spread this over the hot cake. Spread it evenly. So it is going to just soak right in there. And then you return it to the oven, baking it 5 minutes or until it's set. And then you can sprinkle it with your cinnamon if you so desire. Of course, you cool it. Let it cool totally. That's going to take a couple of hours. And then you put it in the refrigerator. And when you're ready to serve, I'm telling you, this is great. Now, let me give you a couple of Donna tips. Whenever you're using a cake mix, and this was taught to me a number of years ago, and it really, really works, if you want a real, real rich cake batter, and you're using a standard cake mix, you want to use an extra egg, and you want to use milk instead of water. Now, that may sound a little strange, but I've done an experiment where I used heavy cream instead of water. And you'll find that the moisture and the texture of your cake, your store-bought cake, is going to be incredible. So just add those two things. Add an extra egg, and if you want, add whole milk or your heavy cream. And you've got a cake that is just going to be out of this world. And some of the cake mixes, you know, they'll tell you to add oil and all that. You do that just like you say. Just substitute, instead of water, add your heavy cream. It is out of this world. And I was taught that so many years ago, and it is just wonderful. So anyway, this is a cake mix apple spice custard cake. And you know what? It's great if you're going to be going to an Easter potluck. If you're going to be having a lot of people over at your home, let's face it, Easter's a big holiday for a lot of people. So if you want something that's going to serve a number of individuals, this is something that nobody would expect, and it is really, really good. Okay, so that is that there. And then I wanted to share, just as a compliment to the story about the CEO, this is something that Tom sent. You know what? It looks like I'm out of time. Hey, I'm going to have to pass. I'll have to share this with you tomorrow. And tomorrow we're going to be talking about going from breakup to wake up with Michelle Majors. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Have a fabulous day. We'll be back here tomorrow, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.